Hi, so welcome back to my podcast about History of the Americas, IB DP Year 1. So today we're going to be talking about the Gilded Age and a bunch of different social issues from the time that we've learned about through class. So yeah, I'm Mariana, and I wanted to do like a little different take on this podcast. So typically, these types of things are like scripted and really well thought out, and mine's going to be well thought out, but I wanted to be more natural and more myself for this, so I'm going to be talking about these issues as I read through the articles. So you're going to hear my first impressions, my first thoughts, everything. So yeah, let's get into it. So the first social issue that I'm going to be talking about from the Gilded Age is women's suffrage. So I just pulled up an article by the company Lumen, or the organization, not quite sure. And so the first thing they have listed here is the term first wave feminism. And so what it says here is that it is first wave feminism describes the women's movement during the Gilded Age, which primarily focused on women's suffrage. I think that's a pretty interesting term. Like, I didn't even know about it. And it's kind of cool that it's specifically about the Gilded Age. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. Some key takeaways: important activists in the women's movement included Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Victoria Woodhull, Carrie Chapman, Kat, Alice Paul, Sojourner Truth, Ida B. Wells, Margaret Sanger, and Lucy Burns. So actually, one name that really stood out to me was Susan B. Anthony, because I remember learning about her probably back in the fifth grade. And like learning about her impact on women's rights, so not the Gilded Age, women's suffrage, but women's rights in general. And one thing I remember about her that was really interesting was that not only in this time period did she focus on giving women more rights, but she also started her own movement against slavery. And so actually, I think at the age of 17 or something crazy like that, she actually made an anti-slavery petition. So I think she's pretty cool. Let's see the rest of the article. Another prominent movement in the Gilded Age that had to do with women's suffrage was the Women's Christian Temperance Union, which was led by Frances Willard, which advocated prohibition against alcohol. I don't really think that has much to do with the Gilded Age. Let's move on. Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton's National Women's Suffrage Association and Lucy Stone's American Women's Suffrage Association advocated a woman's right to vote. So actually, I knew about the National Women's Suffrage Association, but I never really connected it to any certain time period. Like, when I learned about it, I kind of just accepted it as part of history, but never about the Gilded Age, which had so many other elements in play, like immigration and so, like, immigration, child labor, all this other stuff. And I never knew that the National Women's Suffrage Association was going on in cadence with all of this. It's pretty interesting. Feminists also fought for women's rights within marriage, healthcare, higher education, and workplace. So that's pretty cool that at this point in time, the voices of women weren't really heard and weren't really accepted. So it's pretty cool that they decided to take on the issue head first and go into big topics like marriage, healthcare, education, workplace. That's pretty substantial. Like, go them. Feminists began to organize women's clubs that focused on both political and social issues of the day. Yes, that has a lot to do with what I just said, that they really went in head first with this. Sojourner Truth was a freed slave who worked for abolition, women's rights, and prison reform. So this isn't in the article, but I actually know that she worked a little bit with the same cause as Susan B. Anthony, so I think it's pretty cool that Susan B. Anthony had a passion for anti-slavery, obviously, and she got to actually work with someone who had a background in slavery, which is, I think, it's pretty cool. Not that she was a slave, but it's pretty cool that the two worlds could collide to really make a better place. So yeah, that's pretty cool. I'm gonna keep reading through this article, and I'll hop back on here when I see something that really stands out to me. Okay, so now that you've heard my first reactions to all this information, I have regrouped and read a few more articles and gotten a better understanding, so now I'm here to share what I've learned. So something that I thought was really cool was this whole movement as a whole and the impact it left. So the Gilded Age, which was in the late 19th century, was kind of a big political turning point for a lot of different aspects, not only just women. It was very impactful in the government, for migration, for Black people, for voting rights in general, for so many different groups. But obviously, we're focusing on women right now. So one term that really stood out to me was the term, in quotations, the new women. So obviously, like I mentioned before, women weren't really regarded as highly as men were. So when they first started using their voice, all the men were like, whoa, 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 who are these? Where did our young, little, quiet, idealless, educationless women, like, what are these outspoken people doing? Like, this is a shock. And so the phrase the new women refers to middle and upper middle class women in the last quarter of the 19th century who started advocating for women's rights. And so what they started really doing is fighting for the basic stuff. So and the women that were fighting for the basic stuff, it was more like on the down low, like voting in your community, or I'm getting a bit overwhelmed. It was focused more on specifically women, like issues that were attributed with women specifically, like abortion, birth control, and overall reproductive rights of women and stuff like that. So that was the first wave of feminists, so the first wave of the new women. But the second wave focused on, like, the big boys, like the big topics. Like I mentioned, they really went in head first. And these included, where did it go? Oh yeah, marriage, healthcare, higher education, and workplace. So the reason why the women's rights movement within the Gilded Age was so important, because it's the first time that women got up the courage to really speak out. And what I mean by this is that this is when they first really started noticing change in the community that they were building. And yeah, actually, since I'm trying to be really natural on this podcast episode today, I'm going to do a little bit more reading just to fully gather my thoughts, but I really wanted to give you my first impression and my second impression on my thoughts and these ideas, so I will get right back to you. Don't worry. Okay, guys, I'm back now, and I have my thoughts fully gathered, unlike last time, but we're still going to leave it in. I need to be completely myself. So the exact moment when women really started seeing a change was in 1860, when New York passed a revised Married Woman's Act, which gave women the opportunity and the privilege, in quotations, the privilege of shared ownership of their children with their husband. So before, it was the husband was the leader of the household and the kids belonged to him and the wife was kind of just there. But now families were regarded as a husband and wife together and then the kids. So they were a team rather than two separate parts. And so yeah, this allowed them to have full ownership of their children, which is insane. Like, the women birthed the children and they didn't get ownership, like they didn't get official ownership of their own children until 1860. That's crazy to me, because I don't think that should be a bill or an act that has to be passed. I think it should just be given because they did birth them and they're providing for them. But we'll move on from that. After the Married Women's Property Act, they experienced more setbacks and stuff, obviously, because they're still kind of getting up on their feet. But yeah, most of the setbacks were experienced in New York and other states, but feminists were able to use each new win as motivation for applying more leverage on unyielding legislative bodies. So what I think this means is that although they experienced setbacks, with the setbacks also came victories. And with each small little victory leading up to bigger and bigger victories, the men were like, hold on, like, are they actually doing this? Like, what? This is not what I expected. They were blown away because they didn't think women had a voice. So each victory was more and more recognition and more respect they were receiving from the community. And by the community, I mean men. They finally gained respect from the men. So yes, that's what that means. So we'll move on. The end of the first wave is often linked with the passage of the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which granted women the right to vote. This was the major victory of the movement, which also had achieved reforms in higher education, the workplace, and professions, and healthcare. So finally, a little bit after the Gilded Age, in 1920, women were finally given, or not given, they were finally recognized in the fields that they had been fighting for. So like I mentioned before, they were fighting for higher education, recognition in the workplace, professions, healthcare, like I said. And finally, in 1920, with the 19th Amendment, they gained the right to vote, which also was a straight path to these goals that they were fighting for. And actually, one thing that also stands out to me is the fact that like men of color were given the right to vote in the 15th century, which was during the Gilded Age, but women weren't given the right to vote until four amendments later, which is crazy. I'm not saying that any group of people is above another, but it's crazy how much time spanned in between the different genders and their and them being given the right to vote. Like men, white, wealthy men were given the right to vote without anything, without any background, they're just given. And then amendments later, finally, they decided to diversify and open their brains and accept other people. And so finally, more men got the right to vote. And then finally, the 19th century, we started seeing change. But we didn't completely see all the change we wanted to see, because actually, many white women excluded black women from the organizations and their movements because they didn't want them to taint their reputation. So basically, what this means is that at this time, the Gilded Age, the late 19th century, people were still quite racist, especially in southern states. And that's kind of seen today too, but especially in the late 19th century, in the time of the Gilded Age, which is something I don't think is discussed that much when covering the Gilded Age. The fact that racism was still so huge in this time has kind of been overlooked, but it's still quite mentioned. And so, like I was saying before, that although white women were fighting for equal rights, they didn't seem to think that equal rights between race was as significant as gender. So yeah, they thought that the southern voters and southern men would be less likely to support their cause if they included black women. So they decided to exclude them from the women's movement, which we'll later see a change in that in the political climate in the coming years, and the coming years exiting the Gilded Age. So yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. Okay, I know this podcast has been all over the place, but trust me, if you really listen, you'll see what I'm trying to say. So kind of to summarize the women's right movement in relation to the Gilded Age, I'm going to give you sort of a timeline of everything that I've discussed. So the women's movement and the women's suffrage movement really started gaining momentum in around 1840. So like when you think of this, like I want you to remember that the Gilded Age in correlation with women's rights started around the 1820s, and they didn't gain momentum until 1840, which is a 20-year gap, which when you think about it, it doesn't sound like that much, but 20 years, that's more than I've been alive. So that's a lot. So they first started gaining momentum in 1840. So that happened. And the next day I want to consider is 1869. So 1869 is a long time after 1840, approximately 30 years, right? And this is when they first started actually seeing change. So 1840, they started gaining momentum. 1869, the first impactful change happened. And this was the establishment of organizations to fight against discrimination of women. And so the first organization was called the National Women's Suffrage Association, which was led by Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. And so they focused more on individual women's rights. So this included women's rights in suffrage, women's rights in healthcare, women's rights in education, women's rights in politics. So they really had the whole thing going. They wanted to target every single thing they could. And trust me, when I say that they were really determined, they were really, really determined, because they had some of the most substantial protests in all of history, second to the current Black Lives Matter protests and the civil rights protests of the 1960s in the US. So comparing them to those, you can tell how substantial these were. So yeah, that was 1869, 1870-ish. The other organization that was established was one made by Lucy Stone, which was called, let me look it up just to get the exact name. Lucy Stone, Women's Rights Organization. Let's see what pops up. So actually, she, So when I look up her name, I'm not really seeing. Yeah, I'm not really seeing what her organization was called, but something that I have been seeing a lot about her was she was very big on anti-abolition. And so she was around since the beginning. Or not anti-abolition, oh my gosh. No. Anti-slavery, not abolition. Oh my goodness, that, ignore what I just said. But she was also very big into slavery, into helping it, not supporting it, but preventing it. And like I mentioned before, a lot of the feminists and women activists of this time were also very prominent activists in slavery. So I think this is a really important point to think about and mention, because obviously slavery was still going on in this time, even though it was banned and it was forbidden. And these two movements started kind of clashing. So people who supported the abolition of slavery started supporting the women's rights, because they were led by the same people. And so not only did they gain momentum from the population of women, but from the population of those who were fighting and fighting against Southern beliefs and who were fighting to eliminate slavery. So I think these two groups together is something that you should really keep in mind when considering like the women's movement in comparison or in relation to the Gilded Age. So yeah, that was 1870. And it all really started picking up from 1870. Men, like I mentioned before, were blown away, which is amazing, like bravo. But yes, and around 1919, 1920, which actually isn't that far away, like we're in 2020, so 100 years. But that is, I know it might sound like a lot, but it's not that much when you think about it. So we're in 1919, and in this time, the women's suffrage movement saw its greatest success. Women were granted the right to vote through the 19th Amendment. So like I discussed, the 19th Amendment was a huge thing. It was the first official government-signed and fully supported amendment. And it was the first big thing that gained, it was the first big movement that changed the Women's Act and the women's movement as a whole. So before, they were gaining successes in small towns, small cities, small organizations, stuff like that. But this was the real deal. The government recognized it. The government recognized the women's movement as a real thing, and they even decided to go into the Constitution and amend it and rewrite the Constitution around what the women's activists were fighting for. So their hard work, their protests, everything led to this amendment being passed, the 19th Amendment, which is a great, great success. And actually, president that held power in this time was Woodrow Wilson. So he, along with a lot of the men of this time, weren't known to be female activists per se, but he supported this because of consistent and persistent protests, petitions, and recognition from women's groups. So yeah, there are actually a few articles about him and his support for the women's movement. I'm going to try to find something good to close out with. Let me just go over here. Woodrow Wilson, women's rights speech. So here, yeah, so the first few things that you see is that in 1918, President Woodrow Wilson speaks in favor of female suffrage. Boom. And so, yeah, he was one of the first big political figures to advocate for women's rights, which I think is really cool. So obviously the dates 1918, 1919, and 1920 are very important to keep in mind. Another quick fact that I want to add to the timeline I just discussed was the date 1872. So this is right after they first started gaining momentum and they first established their organizations. So something I want to add was that in the early 1870s, women fought for the constitutional right to vote. And later on, an act was actually passed, and Susan B. Anthony succeeded in voting in 1872, like I said, but she was later arrested for the act, and she was found guilty in widely publicizing a trial that gave the movement fresh momentum. So basically what this means was that she was arrested for hyping this act up, which the government thought was false momentum. So they believe that Susan B. Anthony was feeding the masses of people lies. So that's why the women's rights movement was gaining so much momentum, which I think this is pretty messed up. Like, I cannot believe how sexist our history and the leaders within it have been. Like, it's crazy that they really thought that a woman trying to advocate for herself and all women, to say the least, would get punished for doing something as small as this. She got arrested. Some people who do way worse things and hurt more people and damage the society more don't even get arrested. And she got arrested for simply advocating for and educating people on the injustices that women were facing. So I just thought I should throw this in here because I saw it and I thought it really stood out to me. So that's why I wanted to discuss it really quickly, which is just crazy. Yeah, I'll get back to you when I find more intriguing stuff. Now, I know I've given you a lot of information, but to tie all the loose ends up together into one big knot of the Gilded Age in relation to the women's rights movement, I want to say this. Although the women's rights movement and its leaders and participants and members might not have been the most open-minded at the beginning, like I mentioned, they definitely opened their hearts and their hands to a lot of other issues and a lot of other groups of people that were in need in the end. So after they started seeing success in what they were doing and they started seeing success in their methods, they started tackling other issues of the Gilded Age, including corruption of the government, child labor, and protecting workers and consumers. So child labor and corruption of government were also two huge huge topics of the Gilded Age. So I thought it's really, really cool that they decided to take these on too. So considering all the information that I've given you, it's clear that the Gilded Age not only was a time of wealth and success for government and leaders and people in power, but it was also a time of success for minorities of this time, including women and children, who are being put through so much discrimination and through so much pain, and so many groups of people, not just women and children. There's so many other ones that we don't even know of, but it's just crazy. This whole movement really, really started the general movement of equality in our country. And so this continued through time and all the way until 1912 with Theodore Roosevelt in power and the Progressive Party movement and change continued to happen. And it saw another landmark, like I said, in 1912. So yeah, that is pretty much all I have to say in this very messy but very educational podcast. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode and I hope that you come back for more and maybe I'll have all my thoughts together by then. So thank you.